You're listening to the LSE Review of Books Academic Inspiration Series. LSE Professor of Human Rights Law, Conor Gearty, talks to us about why law books failed to captivate him early in his career, and instead he credits classical philosophers for originally sparking his interest for academia.
My initial problem is that I really hated all the books I had to read at university. First 2 years, law, they were so dull. So the university experience isn't one where you are reading what could in any sort of normal way be described as stimulating books. You wouldn't want to read them outside class, and you wouldn't want to read them if there weren't the incentive of an examination at the end. So that's a kind of unusually, in the scholarly, academical kind of way, arid experience. Now, it changed a bit in third year, and I remember the reason why was because we were allowed to take a politics course, and there was this guy, I was at university in Dublin, who was occasionally on the telly, which made him a massive celebrity, and he was a priest, a Dominican, and he would be on the telly talking about why unmarried mothers should be allowed to keep their babies, or why, quite possibly, I don't recall exactly, priests should be allowed to marry. So he's a fantastically liberal figure. And he was a brilliant teacher. His hands, I remember, withered with arthritis. And he taught the great books, as I now realise they'd be, you know, Aristotle, Hobbes, Machiavelli, Plato. And it was fantastic. And I realised, you know, you could read these books and you would both enjoy them and you would be examined on them, but the examination would be a way of expressing yourself rather than a set of hurdles that needed to be negotiated. So that was my first experience, really, of the possibilities of university work. And I wanted to become a politics guy. I tried to give up law, and the law department, they found some regulation, which meant that I couldn't transfer to the master's course in politics. So I was stuck becoming what's called in Britain and Ireland a solicitor, which was the dreariest time, with books that could barely be called books, you know, loose leaf or typewritten foolscap, with the various rules that you would have to learn off about endless practicing procedure. So I ran off to Cambridge and I tried to become an academic in order to avoid becoming a practitioner. And then I really began to come across books, you know, interesting books. I found out that the bits of law that I liked were the bits that connected with politics and history. And so I read quite a lot of books by political scientists who took an interest in law, and vice versa. And I remember, actually, because I work now at LSE, it's fun to remember that one of the books that made an early impact was a very journalistic work by an LSE professor called John Griffith, which was about basically how dreadful the judges are, right-wing, reactionary, male, upper class. It's called The Politics of the Judiciary. And they didn't like it particularly in Cambridge, but I remember it being very interesting that people could write like that. And then other LSE people from the 30s and 40s, Harold Laski, Robson, I now realise, doyens of a different way of doing law to which I had no exposure, which was about seeing that law was part of something and not a thing in itself, really. I went on, stayed and did a PhD on environmental stuff, which was historical. And my research supervisor, he'd written a couple of very good books in the 60s before he went into administration. And they were books about official secrecy and public order. But they weren't the normal, boring law books. They went into the local newspapers. They examined parliamentary debates. They told stories. That appealed to me as a way of connecting the rigors of law with the reality of the world around us. And that's always been a big problem for me with the way law is done. For example, you're teaching early on in your career, as I was, constitutional law, civil liberties, they used to be called, human rights they'd be called today. And at the same time, there's this horrific miner strike with tremendous and evident daily examples of police violence. And yet you're teaching how historically connected to and committed to freedom of assembly and freedom of protest Britain is. And you're supposed to go in and lecture all this nonsense, which is just completely undermined by turning on the TV. And so that disconnect annoyed me. And then I realised it didn't have to be there. And people like David Williams, who was my research supervisor, and then Harry Street had written a book called Freedom, the Individual and the Law, which is more about freedom of expression. They showed it was possible to do law in another kind of way, and they were important books for me when I look back on it. That's the kind of book I ended up writing, really, with my friend Keith Ewing, who is a much better grasp of how to write law when I first started working with them as a young academic. Books that, say, take a leading case and then explain the beginning, middle and end of it in a way that's not just about the case. And another person whom I got to know, who is very, very good at that, was a man called Brian Simpson, British guy, recently died, sadly. And he had written this book, which I bought for my brother as a Christmas present, a law book, but it was a kind of fun book because it was called Cannibalism and the Common Law. And he'd had this brilliant idea of taking a case in about 1888, which we all knew. Some of these cases, if you're not a lawyer, some of these cases are really fun, where these chaps had been on a boat and the boat had sort of, whatever happens to boats, becalmed or stopped working. And they ended up in a small little boat and they had a rather attractive looking cabin boy and they sort of ate him. And they survived. So they arrived in wherever it was they arrived and said, isn't that marvellous? Here we are alive. And you know what? He was lovely. So, of course, they made it impossible not to prosecute them. And they were prosecuted. And so the whole issue was whether there's a defence of necessity to murder. And we've all known the case. But Brian did this fantastic book drawing out of this episode a whole series of sort of stories about cannibalism and about law. And he then was somebody who showed a different way of doing it too. And he wrote a book on the Second World War detention powers called In the Highest Degree Odious, which was a great book. And so I found that there were these books which could give you a sense of how to write. And through my career, I've always thrown myself into new people as a way of unlocking new opportunities for creativity, really. So after that, there were a lot of theorists, funnily enough, Americans, talking about how can we have a system where judges can strike down laws and why do we call that democracy? And books by a famous guy called John Hart Ely called Democracy and Distrust was a big book for me. And then this chain-smoking right-wing guy called Robert Bork, whom the Republicans had tried to put on the United States Supreme Court, but they'd failed because he was too right-wing. And he wrote a really good book called The Tempting of America, The Political Seduction of Law, in which he attacked courts for their progressive views and how they imposed their version of right and wrong on the electorate. So I enjoyed that very much. And so I was always open to be influenced by excellent writing, whether or not it led me in a direction I wanted to go. So those books were important. And then philosophy as well. Richard Rorty became a big guy for me because he wrote in a way that was readable. And I read a lot of him. And that took me into thinking about the foundations of human rights because he'd written this incredible lecture, an amnesty lecture, on human rights, more or less saying they don't exist. And these books then got me thinking about what the foundations of human rights are, because by then I was this professor of human rights law, so I needed to profess human rights. And so these thinkers were kind of shortcuts to the excellence of philosophy. And I've always used writers as guides to a much wider range of literature, because I think the only way you can do interdisciplinary work is by trusting top guides. And then there is Passion, The Law as a White Dog, by Colin Diane, whom I was able to have speak at this at the Centre for the Study of Human Rights. And that book brought a kind of passion, which I like as well, a passion with mastery of data. And again, here's a person who's a specialist in law, but is an English professor. So I think one of the themes of my reading is a respect for people who bring an interdisciplinarity in the structure of their thinking and not just in what they dabble. Tom Bingham, judge, wrote a wonderfully constructed little book called The Rule of Law. And one of the reasons to agree to review books is to make you to read them carefully. Because what you're always trying to do is battle the moment, and you need a strong incentive to read properly. And reviewing is an incentive to read properly. And some books deserve proper reading, many books don't. One of the biggest things I remember is bumping into some guy at a drinks party and thinking he's boring and realizing I'd been trying to understand him in print a couple of weeks before. And I thought to myself, if I can discount him in person, why don't I discount him in print? And it was a sudden liberation. Just because there's words jumbled on a page by some guy doesn't mean that you have to try and understand them. You can just as easily say they're beyond comprehension and it's not my fault, which is a fantastic liberation. It's very hard for a student to do because students always assume something's going on that they don't understand. Well, actually, maybe nothing's going on. Maybe the guy's just not very bright. And that's a terrific thing to discover. And so you can tell good writing. And when you get good writing, you can tell the beginnings, middles and ends that hang together. The Rortys, the Ronnie Dworkins, actually, in his own way, too. You really can learn from good books. And you shouldn't waste time with bad books.
That was Conor Gearty. You can read more academic inspiration posts on our website, lsereviewofbooks.com, or listen to more from LSE academics like Linda Yu and Mary Evans on our podcasts. If you'd like to get in touch with us, just email lsereviewofbooks@lse.ac.uk. You can tweet us @lsereviewbooks and find us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.